Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.O. Covan. I am J.O. Covan, here, as always, with producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. And Frankie's with me, too.
Frankie is here. And people will just, I guess, have to take our word for that at this point.
Yeah, unfortunately, we said it on a prior episode, but it really was genius of us to show Frankie on the episode where we didn't have video.
Yeah.
Like, we planned that.
An incredible running gag that we happened upon by accident. And Frankie, I have big news for Frankie. Maybe you want to earmuff him. I don't know if he's ready for this.
Oh, yeah, this is
good. Yeah, Frankie's been the number two dog in my life ever since you got him.
Yeah.
You know, he's very warm to me. Mm-hmm. He seems to really like when I show up. I'm very engaging with the scratches and the pets. But on October 10th, Cookie Bear Covan, the first dog, the George Washington of my home in terms of dogs, will be getting a John Adams. It's a little Jonathan Groff for you. Because Clifford, big guy, 80 pounds, by the way, almost double Cookie size.
But you got the space for him in Jersey.
We're pushing it, I think, at this point. The 80 pounds, I was like, you got anything 60 or less? And they're like, we have J.J. Watt in dog form. How's that sound? Is that the right size? Sure. But he is a beautiful, handsome kind of lab golden something mix. But the rave reviews of this guy, they were just like, he is the most wonderful dog. His foster was like, I'm not ready to get another dog, but this is the dog I would want. And I'm like, sad to see him go.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I drink dog adopter, a dog foster tears, ma'am. So he's coming. He's coming on October 10th. They say he's like a loving, fun, roll with the flow. Like if you're playing, he'll play. If you're chilling, he'll chill, which is great. He's 3 years old.
Yeah.
I don't want to see any James Spader, Susan Sarandon type romance with him and Cookie. That's a White Palace reference from 1990, I believe.
One of the few that's gone over my head.
A movie I never saw. I just, you know, I remember, unfortunately, like from 85 to like 99, all useless things are just locked in here.
Yep.
Steel trap for things I no longer need. Meanwhile, I'm having borderline anxiety attacks at home doing my job, my day job. So that's
why. What's going on there?
Something happened, I think, and this goes back to the fear of flying episode, which... you know, might have to join baseball in the Hall of Shame, apparently. I thought that was great. People who did listen thought it was a great episode, but it was not algorithm-y.
That's one for the insiders.
It wasn't algorithm-y. But I did think titling an episode Fear of Flying could be a topic somebody might stumble on and go, what's this about?
It's not rage baity enough.
Yeah. Like, I killed somebody on a flight.
Right.
That's.
Right. And here and here are my thoughts.
Our new titles are going to just be clickbait, what's the word? Manipulations of what we're actually doing. So today is newspapers, but maybe we should title it.
I've got one. Don't ever read a newspaper again unless you watch this video, before watching this video.
Oh, wow.
Right? Isn't that good?
A million views, followed by, I made it 50 minutes through, and I still haven't heard why I'm not supposed to. Unsubscribe.
Why are there so many Godfather references?
I am the hunted one. When I went on that flight, and now it may be a coincidence because my job training was over, and my job has now picked up. And this is like, even though I had a real job at Simpson Thatcher, of course, this is the first job I've in a long time that I think I cared about the work.
Mm-hmm.
Simpson Thatcher, I cared about keeping that job because it was a good job. So it's like, okay, working, doing doc review and things for giant companies doesn't get me excited, but let me do the work.
Right.
So I keep these benefits and this nice salary.
And these Rangers tickets.
Yeah. This one I care about, but I think it's something different because when I went on that flight, it's almost like, and maybe you can answer this. Does depression ever morph into anxiety?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
No, because it feels like, it almost feels like my depression gave up. Like, well, he's not doing anything about it. Can we do something else to get him riled up? Like, so he pays attention.
Yeah.
That's what feels like has happened to me.
They go hand in hand.
But it feels like they it's like tag team.
Yes.
Like I was just doing like body slams. I'm not even paying attention to you, depression. And then anxiety was like, come on. Ah! And came running in. And it was kickstarted with that flight.
Yeah.
Just got, I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine flying.
Yes.
I am fine flying. we land, I'm like, yes, I have a show. I've got 70-year-old Republican women sitting on my lap. I fly back. We have two out of 10 turbulence for about 3 minutes. I'm like sweating. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to kick anxiety since.
Yep.
Like,
this is why I don't fly, dude.
But I feel like it was almost like a catalyst, not like I've flown all the time. It's almost like I'm in a different place mentally,
dude. The first time I ever got diagnosed with
Trump. Sorry, just yeah, you know what I'm doing.
I think the listeners are aware that I worked a semester in Disney World. Yes,
maybe.
Okay,
well, I
worked a semester,
but I'm
Disney
a talker,
World.
Not a listener.
How true it is. I worked a semester in Disney World when I was in college, and the first time that I got diagnosed with any kind of mental health issues was after I had depression the entire time that I was working and anxiety when I was working in Disney World, and I think it was
happiest place on earth.
That was the irony of it. I tried to do bits on it and I never figured out the way to do it, but like, yeah, I was like suicidal in the happiest place on earth. Oh. And I think it was kicked off because I had taken this flight that I was so nervous about. But like you said, you land and all of a sudden you go, oh my God, I'm fine. I'm so safe or whatever. And then you open the door to all this brand new sort of the anxiety kind of gets you thinking and it gets your nervous system kind of firing in a bad.
Yeah.
With bad momentum, you know.
I thought my biggest problem right now is that I'm fat.
Like, well, I could, like, be contributing.
I was like, I got to get rid of this. Yeah. And now I wake up at 5, I make coffee, and I'm like, oh my God, the workday starts in 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I want to do a good job at this job. So there's like a little bit of that. But I literally said to Laura today before I left for this podcast, I said, I always like to leave her on a high note. I said, the worst case scenario with this job is I get fired. And when I say that, it's like, oh, that's not, I don't want that at all. It's right. Embarrassing. I don't want to do that to the people I work with and that I'm working for. But I'm like, that is the worst case scenario.
Right.
You know, joking aside of somebody going, oh, it could be worse. Yeah. As far as the job's concerned, worst case. That isn't what's making me nervous. It's not losing the job. It's somehow the active process of doing the job. Like, I was like frantic today and it was so weird because I was just like, just do the thing. It's not like you don't have that much work right now. You have some work you have to do. And it was just, it was a weird thing because I have felt so, and I, my other question, you know, at some point I will go back to a professional, but I figure I have, you know, for the price of none, I have Mike and Frank staring at me.
10 years of therapy. You know.
But does anxiety sap your energy? Because that's more like depression, I feel like.
I think the thing that you're not linking here is that they are kind of, they're not exactly the same thing, but
they're 69ing my brain right now.
Yeah, they just like the symptoms are both like anxiety. The over the top symptoms are when you kind of start with catastrophizing,
right?
Which can become and these are obviously everybody's anxiety is somewhat different, but like anxiety usually stops people from doing things because of some miscalculated fear that's probably not real.
Right.
Depression stops people from doing things because it puts you in this funk. Mm-hmm. And it gives you this like what, who cares sort of mentality, and it affects everything. Like it affects your physical, like you're more naturally tired, you're more all of these things together they do tag team you and they kind of trade on and off if they're not dealt with properly. But I hearing what you're saying and knowing what you're going through in your life right now, I mean, like if you're serious about some of these changes that are coming up for you potentially, then like maybe this has a lot more to do with your that a lot more to do. Maybe there is more at play here than just the job. Like
yeah,
maybe
no,
there
of course,
is stuff
of course.
At play here about you,
Clifford.
You keep well, yeah, maybe Clifford, but you keep saying you know you're gonna wrap up comedy. That's a huge
yeah,
dude. That took me a long time to divorce myself from that identity of Mike the comedian.
Right.
And eventually I was able to do it, but it took a while. And you did comedy longer, more successfully than I did. So if you're serious about quitting, like, I mean, this could be a serious thing weighing on your psyche right now that might be making you anxious. Why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot going on in your life, dude.
There is. But it's like I find myself getting exhausted. Like I'm exhausted, and I'm not like I got to get back to the gym. I got to find a way to like drag my ass out of bed and get to the gym. But it all started with the flight.
Yeah.
And I haven't recovered. I said to Laura, I said, it's been, I don't know how many weeks, but like I haven't recovered since the flight in terms of just the anxiety.
It probably set you off.
Yeah.
And then there's probably more happening that you have to kind of deal with.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's how we kick off a fun podcast. Wow. Jimmy Kimmel's back.
I saw.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording this on Monday. But you know, who knows what national tragedy will have occurred by the time this episode goes up. But, you know, I'm doing the thing where I'm like a rapid response team. I saw on the news Kimmel's back. 5 minutes later, my fans had a Trump response to Jimmy Kimmel. It's blowing up on various platforms. Mm-hmm. But man, it does feel. I got to get to the root of my issues, because the idea of leaving comedy, as much as that may or may not. I know you're not saying that is. You're just throwing out suggestions.
Right.
But boy, oh boy, does it feel. I feel more. Like I don't know if it's anxiety. That might be the depression component, because I feel like I've watched comedy become something terrible.
Yeah.
And I've watched myself have to negotiate being like you should see me go to these videos. If people knew how joyless I was going into the room, it's not that I don't like doing comedy for itself, but I feel like I've been summoned. And I'm like, all right, just turn down the TV. I'm going in the other room for a second. Send. And you're like, amazing. And then I'm like, 8 tickets sold in Philly. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What a joy comedy is. Speaking of which, joy, I'll give you a joy. I did a cameo for somebody a few days ago. I've been doing plenty of cameos, but this person, the cameos are $99. This person left me a $2,000 tip today.
Wow.
Pretty
good.
You're pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You normally don't get the, what's that? 2,000, no, 20, 100 to 2.
Don't ask me.
2,000% tip.
It's a big tip.
It's a pretty big tip.
Yeah.
Like the biggest tip I've ever gotten previous to this was $200 in my 5 years on Cameo. So that's pretty substantial. But what did I do, of course? I said, Cameo, please contact this person to make sure this is legit.
It's responsible.
It is, because I was just like, first of all, I want to thank this person appropriately, which like I'll go do. I guess I'll just go fly back to Chicago. We'll start this whole process again and like do a private show for you.
Yep.
Full nudity just to say thank you. But I'm waiting on the answer, because I think it's not an automatic option, as you can imagine. There's no like, do you want to leave $5, $20? $2,000?
Right.
You have to actively be like,
type in $2,000.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the guy who ordered is like somebody in his 50s, I think. So it's not like a 90-year-old, like,
yeah.
But I feel it's, I mean,
like the rest of your audience.
Yeah. the median age of JL's audience is BC. But I just, you know, and if that's a legit tip, I mean, it's like serendipitous. It's like, I just got a new dog who's going to require stuff and medical and all these other things. And it's like, done.
Yep.
Plus a new Rangers jersey.
Yeah. Hey.
Don't know who I'm buying, though. JT Miller is the obvious choice, because captain.
Yeah.
And I like the way he plays. He plays like he's a shoot up, dump it, crash into the dude, go get like a speed, physical toughness game. Mm-hmm. But he's from East Palestine, Ohio. That's the place where the train spilled, the chemical spill. It's pretty solid MAGA. And I just wish jerseys had little stickers on them for hockey. Like, you don't have to tell me Republican, Democrat. Just tell me MAGA, no MAGA.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be like, let's go JT Miller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he comes out like a Charlie Kirk patch on his jersey. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I got news for you. If you're trying to pick somebody on in the NHL that might not be a MAGA person,
I know.
You better hope they're like Ukrainian or something.
Well, that's the problem. I have too many morals to get a hockey jersey.
Right.
I'm like, no Russians.
What about just getting one with no name on the back? You don't like that?
No. The guy I like on the team, 6'7", 6'7", young player, Alex Edstrom.
Hmm.
He's one of those guys where like Rempe gets all the hype because he's the fighter.
Yeah.
Edstrom is on the same line and just a much better player.
Yeah.
Also a young guy, speed and strength, has some toughness as well. But he has, like, he got injured late in the season last year. So, like, his jersey is not at the level where it's available. Mm-hmm. So, this is really boring. I get it. Anxiety plus Kimmel's back plus cameo tips plus hockey.
Yeah.
I think we might break the algorithm the wrong way.
Yeah,
right. Is it possible for a YouTube video to have negative views?
It's just continuously pushed down. It's right a under parade.
Google has reported a black hole in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Apparently, there's something sucking views from other videos.
Because JL, we're getting reports from the internet that this episode sucks.
Then there'll be like three people go, I liked the talk about anxiety. It's refreshing to hear you break down things that you're going through.
Right.
Well, thank you, my fan base. Yes, sometimes the intro, I'm sorry, new listeners who won't become old listeners. Sometimes it's a shoot the shit. I don't know why I have to be like, you know, the Dark Knight and open with Heath Ledger robbing a bank to keep your interest.
Right.
But sometimes me and Mike shoot the shit. But now it's time for the main topic. We'll be back after this break. Talking about newspapers. And we're back. Mike, people are burning up the airway saying, worst episode ever. Just give me baseball.
Hot off the presses. JL Covan releases the worst episode of Radio Parade ever. Call it in. Get it into the newsroom, Jackie.
Well, yes, I wanted to talk about newspapers today. I was thinking about this last week, and I do want to say one thing, one add-on to the Kimmel thing, just based on the Tim Dillon and especially Andrew Schultz comment. I do find this one thing funny, where an honest broker would admit, yeah, the left sometimes sucks, but what the right's doing is ridiculous. And instead, it's always like, well, you see, the left, it's not okay to make fun of dead, like murdered people, right. And now they're okay with it. Or they're bashing Sidney Sweeney. And now the right's turned into the left. They're cancel culture. I go, there's a big difference. And this can't be said enough. There's a big difference between somebody on Threads told me about Charlie Sheen as one of the people gloating or something. And somebody was like, Charlie Sheen is the left. And I go, oh yeah, no, every Democrat I know wakes up in the morning going, what's Charlie Sheen think about this issue?
The beacon of leftist politics.
Yeah, what? I mean, how up your own ass are you to like throw that out as a serious
that
thing?
That is a crazy thing to
That's
say.
That's a crazy thing
yeah.
to say.
Oh my God, yeah.
But to me, it's this equivalency of like, so a few unknown TikTokers bash Sidney Sweeney, and it suddenly becomes the left hates Sidney Sweeney. Mm-hmm. When Donald Trump, president of the United States, wants to cancel speech,
yeah,
they're both doing it.
Yeah, right.
The left is pro-murder of Charlie Kirk. Yeah. You know, they're hypocrites. Who? Name the person with any influence or power. Who like... Not the person who said, let's not forget his message was not good, but of course political violence is not okay. Maybe some of the people I'm Facebook friends with are the left.
Right.
But it's always this like the left and right. And it's like the power imbalance that is so telling when people willingly disregard the gross power imbalance to say they're both doing it. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is the leader of the country and the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Purple hair girl on TikTok saying that Sidney Sweeney is a white supremacist, not the left. Charlie Sheen saying whatever he said about Charlie Kirk, not the left.
Right.
Don't know why that has to be kept. And because I do despise when people get credit for kind of shitty admissions of like, I'm willing to admit both sides do it. We've switched sides. Both parties are now doing what the other party. Yeah, because January 6th, wow. Right? Just as another example of like, because who can forget the left wing January 6th?
Right.
You know, when Biden lost.
Right.
Remember that? I'll never forget it, Mike. So, and that's why we need to support newspapers.
There it is.
They didn't think I could bring it around.
Neither did I.
But I did. But I did. I, full disclosure, I am in a family of journalists. My brother is an editor at the New York Times, yep. or as I like to call it, the failing New York Times. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law was also a journalist at the New York Times. She's now a journalism professor. Hmm. And so I have grown up, you know, and I think one of the things we've lost in society, like nobody ever wants to connect the dots. Everybody wants to be smarter than what's going on. So whether it's getting your news from social media, remember when people used to begin their day with their breakfast and their newspaper?
Yeah, I do.
Right. And you have, can I get one of those? You're in a tough bind. I don't want to leave the camera.
Yeah.
People that, yeah, they're
on my couch though.
They're right next riveted to right yeah. now. Yeah, if I leave the screen, they're out. The data is, you know, yeah. undeniable.
Right.
So I, Frankie is,
he's causing a ruckus right now.
He didn't go for an exciting time at the kennel.
No, I know.
So he's got all this energy. I remember waking up in the morning and I would go out to have breakfast and my mom would have the New York Daily News and the New York Times. And mm-hmm. you start to see that as a way to begin the day. And I think that is a good way to begin the day. Even if I'm reading the paper at night, if I haven't gotten to it, I always try to read the paper because I go, even if this news is 2 days old now, by the time it's 8 p.m., I'm headed home. This is really like Sunday morning stories that I'm reading in some right. cases. But I'm reading a fully reported, detailed, thoughtful wrap-up of what happened, not an instant headline or anything like that. And I look at where we are because there's so many things going wrong. Like I bitch about the smartphone all the time. Mm-hmm. And the smartphone is like kind of the enemy of the newspaper. It's the enemy of a lot of things, but it's the yeah. enemy of the newspaper.
Yes.
And I just, when newspapers, we talked about bees. Remember that episode?
Yes. I like that one.
It was a good episode. Yeah. And I think we miss a lot of the bees in our society and yeah. a good thriving newspaper in a town, in a city, is a strong, needed thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, look who's finally getting on camera. Is he on camera?
I think he is. Frankie, hey! I got enough of this. Get over here.
All right. You're like fake news, right? You're like, don't stop talking about newspapers. Okay, I shit on newspapers. Well, folks, Frankie is, you know,
finally made it onto the screen.
He's not for a free press. I don't see a lot of people. Like, I'm the only person in my building who gets the paper delivered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me too.
And when I lived in Manhattan, just somewhere very close to here.
Yes.
I remember when I moved in 2008. Oh, yeah. That 2008, Mike. I think there were at least 15 people in the building who subscribed to the New York Times in print edition. Mm-hmm. By the time I moved out in 2019, I think it was 4. Mm-hmm. And some of that is going digital. Some people may find it. Yes, it's cheaper to go digital. So I believe in physical books and physical newspapers because I do think there is something that happens when we appify books and newspapers. I know it's cheaper. It saves paper and trees. But I do think when something is valuable, the way we're built as people, holding it gives it more substance. Maybe that makes me a weak person. It's like, oh, you need to hold it to know. I know here how important words and thoughts and ideas are. But you have something to...
Well, I to support what you're saying, this is not backed up by any data, but in my opinion, as a reader of the newspapers, I get the Times and the Post every day. Mm. You read the Post more for the sports section. he's got to go into...
Hold on. Let's take a very quick break. Real quick, and let
me Mr. Frank!
he's being a nightmare right now.
He's a real Frank. Well, guys, I'm just going to say all the things that I can't say when Mike is around. Boy, is that Frank a menace. No. So to back up what I was saying, you get the Post in the Times.
I get the Post in the Times, and I have the New York Times app as well. But once I started getting home delivery of it, and you know, I grew up reading it with, you know, on paper as well. What tends to happen, I think, is that you end up reading stuff that you wouldn't click on right. If you had the app. So if it's next to a story that you're reading and it looks short enough that you might just want to read it quick, see what's going on there, all of a sudden you have that information that you might not have had if you were forced to click on it on the app.
Right.
And I think that is something that tends to, that's probably contributing to some of the issues that we're having now, where it's sort of the same thing as like following a specific Instagram account that leans in your whatever perspective you or values you hold. So you're not actually getting as much unbiased information
that
you might get if it was just in front of you on a newspaper.
And the New York Times to me is, and they're not perfect, believe me.
Sure.
But you know, we'll get to that shortly. I want to talk generally about newspapers, because, and I'm not even making the argument you must get a physical newspaper, because if everybody were reading the digital New York Times,
yeah,
we'd also be in a better place.
Sure.
So it's the idea of appifying everything, and everybody, like, you can't absorb things. You can't sort of get a more detailed, like, I mean, the New York Times feels like a breeze when I read, you know, like the New Yorker and the Atlantic. Yeah. I'm like, well, these are long form.
Yeah.
But I really think we have lost something, and we don't make those connect. It seems like nobody wants to make the connection to so many of the things we do and depend on and have changed in our lives that are easily changeable back. The smartphone is here. It's embedded in our bone marrow now. But like, reading a newspaper can be part of your morning ritual.
Should be, yeah.
And I get it if you're a Post person or a Wall Street Journal person or a Times person or whatever. But like, this idea, you know, the New York Times, the reason it is the New York Times is because it's the New York Times. And I think just like there is an incentive to get people dumber and more outraged, I think going away from the New York Times, when people go, I'm unsubscribing. First of all, I'll see conservative people do that. I'm like, go away. Shut the fuck up. You know, and Israel, I'm sorry, is such a great litmus test for people. It's like, oh, they didn't say Israel's committing genocide on the front page. They're so capitulating to Netanyahu. Right. And then there's an article the next day that's like, Gaza starving. And they're going, well, what Israel bashing, self-hating Jews the New York Times is. And I'm just like, that's, the New York Times has stood the test of time. Because it is great. It is not perfect, but it is great. It is well-resourced. It has talented people. There are other papers like that, don't get me wrong. But like, you know, we let newspapers fall into the hands of the Jeff Bezos.
Yes,
the Washington Post. We couldn't sustain the Washington Post.
Yep.
A paper that has historical significance in keeping government honest.
Yep.
The LA Times has fallen into the hands of some scumbag billionaire. And we let that happen. We allowed that to happen. And because we stopped thinking of being informed as part of our daily routine, as part of our civic responsibility. And I'm not telling you what paper to read or listen to. Hell, I think if you read the Post or the Daily News, you're going to be probably angrier than, you know, my mom likes to support the Daily News because my brother worked there at a time and it's just part of the tradition. But she tells me every week, she goes, it's like a crime blotter. I'm nervous to go outside. I go,
yes.
Well, maybe you should stop reading it.
Right.
Well, I want to support the paper.
Yeah.
Okay. But that support will drive you to an early grave. But you're like, I don't need you to go that hardcore in supporting print media or journalism. But there, I mean, it is, I don't know how we get our people back into saying, yeah, I should read this. This should be part of my job as an adult. Like, I get that some people are too busy to be informed. I don't begrudge anybody, but on a whole, we have a tremendous amount of willingly ignorant people.
Oh yeah.
Not I'm working two jobs, I got three kids, what the fuck do you want me to do? I'm just concerned with that. Understood. If you don't know what's going on in the world, if like I can't tell that you went to high school based on how I'm speaking to you and you're a college graduate with a job, you're failing yourself and you're failing your fellow citizens.
Yeah.
And I think we've lost a lot of that. And then I'm talking the big national papers. The crisis of local journalism is probably even more important than the big boys. Yes, sir.
I was in Asbury Park in New Jersey this weekend at the time of recording.
A lot of papers closing down.
Well, do you remember the Asbury Park Press? I grew up not far.
I mean, I've heard of it.
Yeah. You know. So when I was in high school, the Asbury Park Press was one of the more relevant local papers that had like some level of esteem in that part of New Jersey, mm-hmm. kind of by the shore. And I think it's out of business now, but even if it exists in like a like an online only form, I was walking around Sunday morning with my sister and the dog, and the Asbury Park Press building is now a bar with apartments on top of it.
Nice.
And it still says Asbury Park Press on the front of it, but it
like
has,
a scalp, like yeah, it's a scalp they right, claimed.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, those local papers, man, forget it. I don't think that they, I don't know how, which ones still exist, even where like around the parts where I grew up, but that was the biggest and like most reputable one. And it's a bar now.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Newark Star Ledger, which became the Star Ledger, yes, doesn't even exist in print anymore.
Right.
It's online. It's NJ.com, yep. Which is a terrible website, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, really serious. If anybody works for NJ.com listening to this, I'm a subscriber. Can it not look like Craigslist or something? Make it look good.
Yeah.
That's all you got now. Yep. Invest some of the money you're saving by not printing the paper. Make the website good. Yeah. It's a shit website. And you're the biggest news outlet in the state of New yep. Jersey.
Yeah.
But local journalism, and this has been said ad nauseum in many places, but obviously is the key to keeping local people honest and informed and connecting people to their community.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, to use another example, still subscribes to the weekly Riverdale Press. You know, just, and sometimes it's got worthwhile things, other times it doesn't. But like, it's another one of those major institutions. You know, it's the same thing I say about church.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. People are less religious. Fewer people go in church. What are you replacing it with, though?
Hmm.
We don't have an infinite supply of things that bring community and morals and values and shared responsibility. We have less of those things. So this idea of us entering some sort of secular utopia, no, as I often say, it's everybody on their phones, fucking their sex robots in their panic rooms. That's where we've evolved as an enlightened atheist information flood people.
Yeah.
That's not a better place.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you what it is, but I think on a secular level, newspapers, both local and national, used to connect us. Now, I will blame Fox News, obviously, my theory on right-wing journalism. I'm not talking about conservative journalism. The Wall Street Journal for many years was a reputable conservative business newspaper. It still has a good rep and got sued because they went after Trump once.
Right. National Review.
Magazine, sure.
They eventually went a little Trumpy, but...
But they stayed away from Trump for quite some time.
Right, I remember.
And I just think when you see this, and I know media is changing, and it's easier to consume a podcast and do this, as well you should if you're watching this one.
Yes.
The formula hasn't changed. Reading a newspaper is better than listening to a podcast.
Oh, for like
for society and for your information and being aware. I'm sorry. You can listen to whoever you want and it can be enlightening. It can be entertaining. It can be informative. But the formula is still the same. It's not like, oh, no, everything's changed now. And I think what Fox News did, at least for media in general, and it affected newspapers, was they didn't inform you or give you a different perspective. They demonized the people that were doing real journalism. And now journalism is shouting and demonizing and not confusing, but...
Just getting to the story first, whether it's right or not.
No, that, but it's their goal is to muddy the waters, not to give you the news. It's to make you not trust the news so that then they can have an equal perspective. Angry opinion and falsehoods can be on an equal footing with, but how can you trust them?
Right.
And I don't know. Why do you think they have like a centuries old track record? Like, does anybody ever fucking pause in this country and go, I didn't like that editorial, but there is a reason the New York Times is every time you go to a fucking library to look up an old story, Yes. No, you don't look up a story from the 60s and go, wow, this is the New York Times right. microfilm or right. microfiche. I don't, can you really trust this as history anymore?
Right.
But we've come up in the age of, I have so much content and so many people telling me that both sides and everybody's wrong, that, hey, I don't trust anything. And boy, does that let me off the hook of having to be an informed, engaged citizen. I don't have to anymore because everything's full of shit. Thanks, Fox News. And I just think I feel like it should be everybody's civic, like, and the fact that we've let local journalism just die and coming back. This is another one of those things where I go, yeah, I feel pessimistic about the future because we're killing things. We're just like we have caused many creatures to go extinct. We're causing institutions that helped us as a society go extinct, replacing them with clearly worse alternatives. You know, and I get it. People on, I still just believe in reading the paper online. I like to get my updates, breaking news, things like that, of course. But like, I don't sit down at my computer and read the paper.
Well, I can also tell you, as somebody that worked in talk radio before podcasting barely really existed, I mean, where do you think we got the information from? When we would go on the air,
right.
we were informed always by the newspapers.
Yeah.
And in New York, when it was local stuff, it was a mix of the Times, the Post, and the Daily News, and maybe the Wall Street Journal, like those. A
little Newsday thrown in for good measure.
Yeah. Long Island, that's right. Yeah, some Newsday stuff. But that was primarily where we got all of our information. AP Wire, like whatever. That was how we, that's what we took to the air.
And if you were racist back then, it was because you were racist, not because your newspaper made you racist.
Right.
Now we're taking quasi bigots and turning them into Klansmen with our molded media sphere. And everybody knows, even if it's not newspapers, everybody knows, yeah, social media is terrible. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's the worst. I hate it. But yeah, I know people say I subscribe to my newspaper. Good. I'm sure many of you do because you're listening to me, but it's just, this is another concern of mine where we've had media people destroying the media for their own gain. And I do think whenever I see somebody bitch about like a New York Times headline, I know I'm biased, but trust me, nobody in my family is unaware that it's not a perfect institution, but I love it, the place of kind of privilege. I rarely use that word, but when people are like, I'm canceling my New York Times subscription, they're done.
Yeah.
It's like, do you know the damage? I'm not saying you shouldn't be critical, but this idea of like, you didn't cover this story I like, or you've been too fair to Trump people. It is a very difficult time to navigate right now. I think the New York Times has been too cautious.
About Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not their job to go, well, they hate you anyway, so tell them to fuck off.
Right.
You can't do that either. They're not podcasters.
Right.
They do have to. They are the paper of record. That comes with extra responsibility. It's the way I've talked about America and Israel. I go, if you're the good guy has to take some L's sometimes. Sometimes you got to take the arrows. Unless you're Bibi Netanyahu, where you're like, I hear there's a Hamas intern in that nursery school. Blow it up. And I mean, I'm sorry. I see some comics who are just like, I'm so disappointed to see like certain people calling for Palestinian statehood. I'm like, I mean, what are we doing with Netanyahu at this point? Like, I mean, you know me. I am not Mr. It's genocide, call it genocide, it's genocide.
Yeah, you were very hesitant to do that.
But no, but I felt like I was appropriately hesitant.
Yes.
Like, I was these things have definitions. Sure. I understand retribution and anger.
But how long ago was that conversation that we had? At least a year ago.
It was over a year ago.
Yeah, and it hasn't gotten better.
And I feel like Netanyahu, I was reading an article in the Times.
Yeah.
Look at that. About like multiple generals who they are obeying orders because your only choice in Israel is you obey orders or you resign.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're obeying orders and somebody could call them genocide adjacent accomplices. But they are out in the public saying we disagree. We do not want to go into Gaza City.
Yeah.
We don't think this is right. We don't think you've been doing a good job. We think you're going too far. You're not like helping peace at all. And then I see like comics who are like, if you're anti-Netanyahu, you fake Jews. And I'm like, you mean like the Israeli generals? Why do I have to I'm not Jewish, obviously, but why do I have to defend Israel harder than the Israeli generals?
Yeah.
Okay, comic. I'm sorry, you're a more righteous Jewish warrior than the generals in Israel. They're a bunch of fucking posers. You know what's up. But that's the kind of stuff I read the New York Times, and I'm sure somebody would say, I hate, they're so anti-Israel. Who? The New York Times or the generals they're quoting?
Yeah.
Right. And just we have being informed, and I know there, I don't like Fox News is like, I will tune on Fox News sometimes as like a, like the way an anthropologist would study something.
Oh, same. Yeah. You know? I love to watch it. I really do.
But it's, I had a dream actually. I said, if I ran for office, I don't want to go on as a Pete Buttigieg and be like, I'm going to duel with Hannity or Waters and I'm going to fucking school them.
Yeah.
You know what I would say to these so-called journalists, these people destroying the Fourth Estate? I'd say, what are you doing here? Serious question. Like here, I'm going to give it to you right now. Sean Hannity, if you ever see this, I have a friend who was at a wedding you were at, said you were very cool, said you set up a live feed because somebody's elderly relative couldn't make the wedding. So yeah. You paid for this live feed. What a great guy. What a nice thing to do for somebody. You've got the money. You've got the heart. Great. Do you think Democrats hate America? Serious question. Do you think they hate America? And I would go, then if you don't, if you think they're like policies are bad, fine. Why do you say they hate America? Why do you say they want to destroy America? Is it for clicks? You're rich. You could start telling the truth again. You're conservative. You're a Long Island guy. You bang an Ainsley. Great. Sounds fun. How much money, how much power do you need to have until you say, hey, the country's kind of falling the fuck apart and I'm destroying journalism and helping destroy what's left of America. You're not destroying it the way a bomb would destroy it, but you're furthering divisions for what? For ratings? You can't possibly be as bad a person as you play on TV, but you're not a fictional character. You're not Walter White. You're Sean Hannity, Fox News anchor.
Right.
And I wouldn't be as excited, but I would just say, when do you stop the hyperbole? I wouldn't try to own him on an issue. I'd be like, the way you talk, I talk that way. I do comedy. You reach people and deliver them the news every day or some version of the news, and you are doing news a disservice and you are doing America a disservice. And where's the guy that uses his money to, is it just for your friends? Do you not care about the average guy out there or woman in the same way? Of course, you're not going to do the same thing, but do you not think there's someone else there who's struggling somehow and that you're adding nothing to the conversation and you're degrading media instead of lifting it up? Imagine somebody on Fox did the opposite of fucking network. Instead of going, I want you to get up, I'm mad as hell. The whole fucking network is mad as hell and they've won everything.
Yeah, right.
What if somebody on Fox said, I'm not that mad. I want everybody to close your windows.
I'm rich as hell, and I'll keep doing this.
And I'm going to fuck Ainsley every night. No, close the window. Open a book. Hug your family members. Call a friend you haven't spoken to in a while. Watch something that you don't normally watch. We need the opposite. Was it Howard Beale? In Network?
I can't remember.
I think it was Howard Beale. Sorry if that's not the name. If there's just some guy Howard Beale out there going, me? But we need the opposite, I think. We need TV to scale back. Now, no, don't get me wrong. Everybody, I know, somebody's already lining up a comment. You think the issue is like if Fox would be nicer? I watched MSNBC. My mom loves MSNBC. I agree with MSNBC on most things. But I did notice the tone. I was like, geez, this is fucking endless, like, I agree on the merits, but like the device, I'm like, geez, I'm not angry enough for MSNBC. Like I can only take, like I watch CNN and I know people go, that's bullshit news. CNN, the one thing you won't catch on CNN, and which is why I think it's more palatable to me than MSNBC and certainly Fox. I never hear an anchor on CNN going, these people hate you. They are trying to destroy, no, a guest or something.
But have you heard that at, in fairness, and God, do I hate to be fair, have you heard that out of somebody's mouth on Fox News?
Sure.
Yeah? I believe you.
All the
I just
time, they, these people, and especially...
I haven't watched it enough to...
The Charlie,
seen that
no, no,
exactly,
the Charlie
but...
Kirk thing was like the perfect, like,
oh, right.
oh, now the gloves can, the gloves have been off. What are you talking about? Right. But now people will like not even question you, going, the war has begun. That yeah. the gloves are off. They hate us.
Yeah,
they hate, you know. The, instead of the we used to 20 years ago, we would say George. Half the country said George Bush sounds like an idiot when they say they hate us for our freedoms.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Now your neighbor hates you for your freedom. That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. My the guy in the other school board hates us because we love America. Does he?
Yeah.
Is that what he hates? He hates you because you love America? It's not. It doesn't even make sense anymore. So on the issues, of course, I think MSNBC is in the right on most things. Not everything. But I did notice the tone. Even there was too much for me to take. And I'm like, and I agree. The problem is on the right wing, it doesn't seem there's a thirst that can be quenched for the relentless. They suck. They suck. Fuck them. Yeah. They suck. They hate you. I'm like, does anybody just ever go, ugh, that's a little much too?
Yeah.
Because that's my big question for as far as news, television news goes. But newspapers are, and that's another point of newspapers. It slows down. It turns the news into information, not into culture, not into energy. It's news. It's facts. It's opinion. It's reading. It's a deliberative process. I think that is also a very good use for newspapers, is that you have to absorb the news in a slower manner, a more fact-based manner, a manner that very few books or newspapers will, you know, there are some articles that will get me. There was an article recently about a home for disabled people in Oklahoma that was, I think it was like Sunday's cover story. Mm-hmm. It was fucking devastating. That got me angry in an emotional way, but it wasn't because they were telling me these filthy animals who hate you and hate kids and hate disabled people. You didn't have to do that.
Right.
The facts told the story. I just think just the way social media, I think, anytime you take a step back from technology at this point, Unabomber moment, anytime you take a step back from technology, this is where we are, I think, in this country, is a good thing. I'm not saying we cannot cut ourselves off. We're past that point. But like reading a newspaper instead of scrolling Twitter, meeting friends for a conversation instead of a chat room or posting on social media. Every time you take a step back from technology, I think it's a good thing. And that's why I think newspapers are still here and still valuable. I think they can serve multiple purposes, not just information, but in the way we consume it. And when we don't consume newspapers, we leave vacuums open for Bezos to destroy a venerable institution. We leave open local politicians who can run amok because nobody is concerned enough with their local newspaper anymore, because we are not connected. We are connected into the internet and our phones, the community. I mean, the amount of times I walk in my neighborhood and can't get a hello from people. You know, I'm not saying I want to live in some cheesy 1950s show.
Yeah.
But I still believe in being neighborly. And that's the one thing I will say. When I was in like St. Pete's Beach, Florida, a couple of years ago, I smelled Republican all over these old people, but boy, oh boy, did we have some nice pithy conversations. Like, how are you? Headed to dinner? Enjoy. I will. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes you feel good. It is. Like Gary Goleman has talked about, I think it's serotonin, like the hits you get from like little interactions with people, that we are biologically wired for that stuff. We have undone our wiring.
Yeah.
And obviously this is a broader kind of topic I'm talking about, but I think you got to address some of the ways we can fix it or the ways we've undone it. And I do believe waking up and seeing a newspaper every morning in my mom's hands as she's drinking her coffee, you know, that became just like she brought me to vote with her. Mm-hmm. You try to make kids, you know, absorb some of this stuff and realize that these things aren't just rituals that mean nothing. They make you a better citizen. They can make you a more deliberative person. And in a time of stupidity and hot takes, newspaper, I think, is something that can help us, but we have to affirmatively do it. you know, whether you want to call it a mindfulness practice or whatever the fuck people have to call things now. You can't just be like, chill out and read a fucking paper and like take a breath.
Yeah.
It has to be a trend or
everything's branded.
It has to be a challenge or a trend or a practice.
The read a book challenge. Sit down, you open the book and you read it until you don't want to anymore.
Like that's what it feels like now.
Yeah.
And I just think, I'm a big believer in newspapers and in journalism. And, I also think the Substack thing, I get that some people are getting rich off of it. I don't think it's not a good trend either. Mm. You know, I'm going to read this. And some of them people report and a lot of it turns into a glorified blog.
Well, I think if it's more editorialized, I don't see any harm in it. If it's more just like a fun thing to read.
No, of course. Of course. But I'm saying when journalism can't support journalists.
Yeah. Well,
and then,
bad.
You know, it becomes like the iBanker model of like, I could teach or I could go into medicine, but the money over there, fuck this.
Right.
And I just think our society was not even a three-legged stool. I think it was a fucking, you know, 12-leg table. And we're watching each leg just disintegrate. And we built this society on the backs of many people and many institutions. And we all talk, not all of us, but especially on the right wing, sorry, there's all this nostalgia for how great America is. But what built America? It's not just white grandpappy. Like, it's not just that. He might have had a part to play.
Yeah.
But all these things we're destroying and letting go away, we're accelerating our own demise while paying token worship to the way things were and ignoring some of the good things from the past that we're letting erode. More rights for people, good. Fewer newspapers, bad. And somehow, you know, tolerance for others, good. Less manners on people, bad. You know, just because I want a kid to call me by my last name with a mister doesn't make me an asshole. Maybe it does. I just think newspapers, it was a little bit about newspapers, but it's also just about what newspapers represent. And we're losing so many things to this and to cable news. And like I said, CNN may be some people's vision of like garbage, but in this landscape there, I feel like sometimes I look at them and I go, well, they're trying to be in the middle. And that, have we lost that? Like where that, like, and I'm not saying in the middle of right and wrong, but they're trying to give people both sides a voice and an equal voice if they can. And just read a fucking newspaper. Okay. Take a chill out, put your phone down, subscribe to a newspaper, whether digital, I recommend print, and encourage someone else to do so, because it's not a fucking mystery what we've lost and what we can gain if we do it in time. So after this super fun podcast, after this break, we'll talk comedy. And we're back, everybody. You know, after an episode of, you know, mental health and the death of America and journalism, you need comedy talk. I know
you have to.
I know you don't like it, but you know, I think the people we try to leave on a good note if we can. Speaking of bad notes, October 4th, Washington D.C. two shows, D.C. Comedy Loft, Philly, October 22nd at the Punchline. November 18th in Huntington. Don't worry about that one. Ticket link isn't up yet. And then in December, 18th, 19th, and 20th of December, Toronto, Yuck Yucks. Both the Trump show on the 18th, and I'm filming a stand-up special on the 19th and 20th. And then December 28th, final show of the year, maybe of my career, Duckworth's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right.
December 28th. All right, everybody. So let's get a punchdown of the week before I give you a truly great comedy special that should cleanse the palate of all that we've been talking about today. I posted a joke when they announced that October 4th, you know, the GOP had announced October 14th will be a day of remembrance for Charlie Kirk, which happens to be George Floyd's birthday, but it's also Charlie Kirk's birthday.
Yeah.
And I just look at that and I go, yeah, we're never going to see how maybe that could be unifying.
Right.
Not that it should be. Not that it should be, because I wouldn't dare equate George Floyd with Charlie Kirk. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying it's like almost, it's like God's trying to still send us messages. Like, guys, can we just somehow, all right, God is Bill Burr, apparently, in my impression. Okay, I'm just trying to tell you, just do it on the same day and you'll see how ridiculous you're being.
Yeah.
No, of course not. So I just said October 14th will be a day of remembrance for Charlie Kirk. Do I get a day off from work for Klanteenth?
Mm.
A lot of response on Threads. Huge, huge shares. Yeah. Huge numbers.
They loved it on Threads.
They loved it. On Threads. They loved it everywhere, but Threads was particularly where
it
was.
Threads.
And then here is, no, but Blue Sky is the real liberal turd site. And then somebody wrote, they replied, now, Klanteenth, there's a reason it got like 6,000, you know, likes and, you know, 500 shares. Klan Day is October 14th. That is a classic punch down.
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a great, it's such a, Klanteenth is so much more original and so much more holiday oriented.
Yeah.
And then you, at me, like you had the better one with Klan Day. What's Klan Day? What's, is that a pun? Is that, what's that? Just you took, you took my joke and worsened it.
Yeah.
You did a classic punch down of the week, you turd. Now, this ain't a punch down of the week. And you know, it takes a lot for me to say when a special is better than mine.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that right now.
Yeah.
But as far as 2025 is concerned, you can rest assured that Trump versus Canada is going to end up on that top of the year list. Mm-hmm. We're getting close. I had basically my two favorite specials of the year so far were Trump versus Canada and Jim Norton's special.
Yes. Right. I meant to.
Yeah, and not necessarily in that order.
Yeah.
But I've just seen the one to beat for the year. It's called Thief of Joy. Mm-hmm. Gianmarco, I think it's Cerisi, but you say Cerisi?
I think it's Sorisi.
Sorisi.
Yeah, I believe it's Gianmarco Sorisi.
Okay. Well, Gianmarco, I think with this kind of special, he can just go by Gianmarco, like he's a male model.
Yeah.
Thief of Joy is an excellent, hilarious, original, tight hour. Like it is, and I'm going to share with the audience what I was sharing with you, because I don't usually get jealous, but what I was jealous of watching this is this guy's a real hardworking comic.
He is.
He is, and the New York Times kind of summed it up as like, he is good at crowd work, he is good at stand up, and he is good at social media. And what I get jealous of is, you know, I have like 7 gigs on my calendar for the year. So the fact that I'm able to put good things together is kind of a miracle in and of itself on a different level. I'm like the pitcher in the 1940s who's like, I have a milk delivery business. And then every 5 days I go out and throw 8 shutout innings. Yeah. Whereas Gianmarco is at the comedy level of like, I have a nutritionist. I have a trainer. I am gifted. I do all the work. Like, you know, it's like watching Novak Djokovic prep for tennis.
Yeah.
Like every, and now he's earned it. Don't get me wrong. But there is a, once you're in, you know, I'm jealous of seeing his calendar so full, because you have the reps, the money, and the time to just be, and this is sounding bitter. I'm not saying I'm crediting him with the best special of the year, but when you see how busy someone is and the kind of force multiplier of like, I got all these gigs. I got all this camera work. It becomes like in this day and age where media is as important as getting your reps in, you can really start to exponentially increase your kind of your lead and your money and your growth as a comedian if you can break through to a certain level. And to his credit, he's put together, he has used that time and that effort very well, because this is a special where for the first 4 or 5 minutes, I was laughing, but I was a little annoyed, which is kind of his, he's a very dramatic, he's a drama guy.
Yes.
A lot of the jokes are that he's not gay, which he isn't, but you know, he's kind of acknowledging. And I once had a joke about Lin-Manuel Miranda where I heard him speak and I said, I thought he might be gay, but it's just, I think 30 years in musical theater.
Yeah. Rubs off.
He just rubs affectations and style and who you talk to. I mean, it kind of is.
Yes.
But after about 5 minutes, because it felt a little like, you know, King of Theater Camp with theater kids in the crowd, mm-hmm. just for a few minutes. Not that it wasn't funny, but I was like, I think this crowd is going to annoy me more than him. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it just never stopped killing. And I was like I said, I was laughing at the parts where I was like eyeing it like, am I going to be annoyed with this? It is funny. And then he just hit this level where it's every bit of this special is good. It's so tight. That's where I get jealous because I'm like, I don't have the reps to ever be as tight as I kind of want to be. Some of my earlier things were probably tighter than I am now in terms of my routines. Because like I said, if I get to some open mics, if I get a couple weekends, and then I got to be like, okay, now it's time to like whittle this down and use every mic and every, but this is, has, I mean, there are lines there that you're like every moment of that, like almost a Seinfeld. And I know he's a big, you know, pro-Palestine guy, probably hates Seinfeld and all his, but there's a Seinfeldian tightness to the writing, but delivering much more volume. It is outstanding. And I just, it was, I have Jim Norton's, I laughed a lot at too. And it's interesting that the two best specials I've seen this year, not counting Trump versus Canada, but no, I'm being honest. This would be 1-2 and I'd put Trump Canada 3. I'm very proud of Trump Canada. I'm perfectly happy if it gets bumped off the list by the end of the year. But right now, this one stands alone as far as every special I've seen. It's on YouTube. It is... like the, he does this, he has these bits and I don't want to spoil them, like talking about comparing going to church every Sunday to drag brunches, and like, and he has this whole thing about he calls like NYU the biggest conversion therapy camp, like in reverse, like because every guy goes in there straight and ends up gay. It's just funny shit like that. It's a masterpiece. I don't fucking say that often. I really do. And I just sat there and was like, damn, this is so strong and this is unique. It's original and it's unique, but it's still within completely within the framework of stand-up comedy. He's towing that line of like theater, one man show, but it is stand-up. It's just, he's towing it in a way that he can. But it's so good. And I'm enjoying like talking about it because it's rare for me. I will watch some special and go, that was good. And I'll watch some and go, that was really funny. And this one was just great. And it was tight. And I'm just, you know, it's refreshing because I can be jealous of somebody's opportunities. I don't mean like shows and things. I just mean more work. He's getting more work. I would love to have had more work in my career to maybe see how good and polished could I have been if I could have just generated more and more opportunities. Because when I was a feature, mid-career getting a lot of feature work, I was probably tighter. Even though I wasn't getting the headlining sets, I was like, every weekend I get 5 20-minute spots. And I could see how good I could get. But in an age where I complain about a lot of veteran comics who kind of are just like, yeah, another tight hour of what you do. It's another tight... This is a tighter tightrope to walk. And he set the bar extremely high for himself. So go watch it. It's one of the best you'll see. And it's the best of the year so far. It's the one to beat. So on that positive note, you know, that's a ray of hope. That's somebody, a newer, you know, he's 36, but that's a newer ish comic who's bringing something hilarious and fresh to a very stale fucking art right now. So after this episode, I think it's good to end on something positive. If you've even made it this far, they haven't made it this far. So on that note, I've told you about my shows. I've told you to subscribe to a newspaper. You know, I've told you what's special to watch. I got to get home and get anxious about tomorrow's work day. So, Mike, thank you. Frank, sorry you're locked away. And I will see you next Thursday.